Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Breaks a tackle, now swings outside. He's at the 30, he's got McSorley in front, throws a block at the 20, 15 to the 10, cuts to his left to the 5 and taken down there. An electrifying run by Miles Sanders. McSorley rolls near side, he's got the opening, he's got the end zone, touchdown Penn State, and the Nittany Lions come out of the gate with an impressive 74-yard drive. Back goes McSorley. Keeps it himself, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State. Ricky Slade to the 5, spins, touchdown, Penn State, Ricky Slade. Backing the south end zone to a right on the far hash. First and goal at the 5. Back goes McSorley. He throws in the end zone, touchdown, Penn State. Pat Freiermuth, game, set, and match, Nittany Lions. Slade to the outside, walks into the end zone, touchdown, Penn State. Fireworks fly, and the Nittany Lions have deserved all the fireworks today because they created it. They lead it 37-3.
Both offense and defensive line, we were able to run the ball. We were able to get tackles for a loss, get them off schedule. That's an offense that had been running the ball on everybody. I don't think they had an explosive run. We had a bunch of tackles for loss, but we've done a really good job tonight. Up front, you're exactly right. O line, D line was the difference in the entire game. I just couldn't be more proud of the entire team. I can't stress enough the games that we have played at a really high level. It's because we've dominated the line of scrimmage. The games that we have struggled, it's up front. So that's the next step for us to be able to do this against whoever we play. The other thing I'm really proud of, guys, is, if you think of since Penn State has joined the Big Ten, they've never had 3-10 win seasons in a row. That's right. Go into this bowl game with a chance to have 3-10 win seasons. And I know this season, there's been some ups and some downs and some frustration. But think about that. Penn State's played a lot of good football here for a long time. And this is one of the best three-year stretches in program history.
It's the first time I've sat in this studio to do a show in 12 days. We've been on the road. I was in Chicago, then I was in New Jersey, then I was in Mexico. It's been a long ride. I guess I was here Friday, doing the show Friday. But, yeah. Great to be with you. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Let's get to news of the day first, then I will get to Penn State football. It has been announced that Mike Watkins will return to the Penn State basketball lineup tomorrow night for the first time this season. So Mike Watkins will be able to play tomorrow night against Virginia Tech. We have talked about parts that have been missing for Penn State. And for Penn State, it's all come down to one guy as a part that is missing. And you're talking about our guy that's a rim protector and some other things that he does. Now, doesn't solve shooting problems or anything like that in a given day, but it'll be the first time all season where they've had the ability to have the full team on the floor. That's what you're hoping for. It gives you know. So at least now I feel like what Pat has had to do so far is that you sit down in the off season and you come up with different scenarios as to how you want to handle something. So a scenario would be, okay, I've got three critical guys in foul trouble. Now, how do I handle that? Okay, so you come up with a scenario. Well, he's had to come up with all of those scenarios early in the season because they haven't had quite the rotation that they wanted to. Let's remember that that last year when Mike got hurt, Penn State still had in the program still had Julian Moore in the program. Now, obviously, Julian was a fifth-year player, so he's going to have to move on regardless. But when John Hara got into trouble, obviously you didn't have Mike there because Mike was hurt, but you still had Julian Moore there. Julian Moore would not lose the game for you. Julian Moore would set some good screens, he'd get some key rebounds, and within the frame of the offense would get you a few points here and there. Not a world beater, not a be-all, end-all, but dependable, and a player you could trust. And so when John Hara would get a foul, boom, he'd come out. Julian Moore would come in. You wouldn't lose that much, if anything. John would then be able to get back in the game. Then once he get a second foul, boom, you bring Julian Moore back in. Well, he hasn't had the luxury this year. He's had John Hara and really nobody else there. Trent Buttrick is doing his best to play the five spot, but it's a different dynamic. And you don't have a rim protector there or length there in that spot against somebody else. At least with Mike, that's step one. It provides the depth there you didn't have before. It provides a rim protector you didn't have before. So, now football. In football, I think we just watched Penn State play its most complete game of the season. And it goes back to what James Franklin said in the clips you just heard. He talked repeatedly about the ability to own the line of scrimmage. Penn State's offensive line owned the line of scrimmage on Saturday. Penn State's defensive line again owned the line of scrimmage, and that's been the story now for not every, but almost every week, except for the Michigan game. I mean, they owned the line of scrimmage against Iowa. They owned the line of scrimmage against Rutgers. They owned it against Wisconsin. They owned it against Maryland. And Yetur Gross-Matos is essentially unblockable now in this league. Do you realize that Yetur Gross-Matos has 20 tackles for losses this year? Just himself. 20 tackles for losses by one guy. On Saturday, Penn State had 15 tackles for losses. Maryland ran 59 plays. That means one out of every four offensive plays in that game that Maryland ran ended up being a loss. One out of every four was a tackle for a loss on Saturday. That's an amazing number. James talked about trying to get to 10 wins. Well, I've talked about this before, but you know, in all this, you hit a certain point, people get upset, they say things along the way. One of the things, what do you have to play for? Oh, for goodness sakes. And then, you know, obviously you know very little about sports if you don't think anybody's people down. I have nothing to play for. Might as well just quit. That's it. We're done. The opportunity to win 10 games in the season is now at hand with the bowl game coming up. Penn State has not had three consecutive 10-win seasons since 80, 81, and 82. So the last time they did it was 36 years ago. For some of you, it's, you know, if you're 30 years old, it's never happened in your lifetime. If you're my age, you remember it. You lived it. If you're my age. But that, you know, and I know they play more games these days. I mean, Penn State won, was it 10 wins? Was it 10 and 2, 10 and 2, 11 and 1? So they played 36 games to do it. if they were to do it this time, they would, you know, and it would totaled, it ended up totaling what, 31 wins. If they were to do it this time, it would total 32 wins, and they would have needed 40 games to get there. I think so. It sounds right. They had the 114 game season to do it because of the Big Ten championship game.
In 80, in 81, they were 10-2, and in 82, they were 11-1.
Oh, so see, I get some things right.
Yeah,
but that's the last time they did it. Now that's at hand. That's what they're trying to do here. But that's at hand to try and win 32 games over a three-year span. I believe Penn State has never won 32 games in a three-year span, to my knowledge. Let's see, 12.
They were close, 31.
Yeah, they have.
Let me see, 23. Actually, from 94, 95, 96, if my math is correct. 94, they were 12-0. 95, they were 9-3. 96, they were 11-2.
Okay. So that's 32 wins. All right. So they do that, they would tie that mark in the best three-year run ever. That 96 team won the Fiesta Bowl, beat Texas, as a matter of fact.
Indeed. That was an impressive stretch from 93 through 99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was. It was a very impressive stretch. Played some good football. Then, you know, then they, then obviously from 2000 to 2004, they had the one really good year with Larry and those guys, and the other years they were under 500, but then got back on track, and then they won 11, won 9, won 9, won 11, won 11. You know, I mean, they had that really good five-year stretch where they won, 51 games or something like that in that one five-year stretch. But, yeah, here's a chance to win 32 games in 3 years. Only happened one other time in Penn State football history. It's pretty good.
Yeah, they're in a good stretch right now, no doubt.
Well, and it's, and I think it has a chance to get even better. Now, we all know that there are going to be certain decisions that have to be made by players. I understand that completely. You have to do what they think is best for their future. But if everything were to stand pat, and I include the specialists in this, by the way, the two deep offense defense, and then I'll take the first team punter, place kicker, snapper, and kickoff guy. The holder and the punter are the same guy, so I don't have to worry about that. So I'll add those four, and that's 48 players. You know the 48 players Penn State has in its two deep? Do you know how many are scheduled to come back next year? 42.
That's a good
thing.
They only
lose six guys. Now, again, let's preface that by saying we do know that obviously there are some players that are going to do some thinking about what they want to do with their future. For example, Rashawn Gary of Michigan declared for the NFL draft today. So some players may fall into that category that they may want to think about what they want to do and at least get an NFL evaluation. But if everything were to stand pat, they would lose Trace McSorley, DeAndre Tompkins, Amani Oruwariye, Koa Farmer, Nick Scott, and the snapper Kyle Vasey. Those are the only six players off the two deep that are seniors. Everybody else has at least 1 year of eligibility remaining. And, of course, obviously the vast majority have multiple years remaining. Multiple years. All right, let's take a break. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Who likes camping out for deals? You don't have to at Sunbury Motors Kia.
We wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
It's That's the Black Friday sales event going on now through the end of the month at Sunbury Motors Kia. Before you buy, give Kia a try. With bonus cash before you begin your holiday adventures. Before you buy, give Kia a try. With $3,500 off on a 2019 Kia Sorento V6. Before you buy, give Kia a try. With many models to choose from under 20 grand. That's right, drive away in a brand new vehicle for under 20 grand, including a 2018 Kia Rio for as low as $14,977. Remember, every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. While you don't have to camp out for these deals, you do want to hurry, because they won't last long at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Tax and tags extra. Offer expires 11/30/18. All rebates included. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Well, great to have you with us. Really special after the game on Saturday to see Amani Oruwariye, Koa Farmer, Jonathan Thomas, Nick Scott, and Trace McSorley make one final walk around the perimeter of the field. You know, waving the fans, shaking their hands, talking to each other as they were going through this. I'd never seen seniors do that before. I mean, obviously I've seen seniors mill around after a game, kind of taking it in one more time, but never take a lap around the stadium like that. It was really cool to see them do that. You know, how much it meant to them. Trace told us that they were reminiscing about when they first got there to where it is now, the first time they ever practiced in the stadium. They talked about that. So there were a lot of things that were running through their minds and the conversations they were having on the field when they were doing that. But it was really something that was neat to see on Saturday, that they took the time to do that, because I'd never seen a group of seniors do that before here at Penn State.
Trace McSorley was like, you know, when he came in, it was dark days in Penn State, and all of a sudden he's brought it back to somewhat prominence, and he was a major, major part of that.
Well, all of them, because all five of those guys came in together. Those five guys all came in at the same time, because they're all fifth-year guys. And it was really it was great to see them do that. It really was. It was great that they did it when we were still on the air, too, because we were able to at least capture the moment. And I thought that was important, to capture that moment for everybody, because it's something, obviously, you know, a lot of people weren't able to see. And it tells you how much it means to them. It's not, you know, it's not a cold, all right, I played, I put the uniform on, I gave everything I had, now I'm leaving. Well, that's not how it is. And I think that showed me a depth of feeling, because all of them are fifth-year guys. You look, for example, in December 2013, which is when there was no early signing period then. Well, let's take a couple of guys, because Cole was recruited directly by James. All right, that happened. Obviously, Jonathan Thomas had been, they liked him a lot, directly recruited. But you look at Trace, Amani, and Nick. They're all going to go to, I don't know if Nick was going to go to Vanderbilt, but Amani and Trace were. If there had been an early signing period, they would have gone to Vanderbilt, because they all would have signed early. Well, turns out there wasn't an early signing period. They signed with Penn State. When they signed on the dotted line in February 2014, Penn State was still a couple of years away, based on sanctions, from going to a bowl game. They were not going to get the 85 scholarships. They weren't allowed to. I mean, that's what they signed on to. And now those five guys are part of a group that's accomplished what they have accomplished so far. Amazing.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And proud to say we're brought to you today by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Why? Well, the Purdy's have served this valley for decades. And the reason they've served the valley for decades is that they've done it right. You don't get the long-term business they have. You don't get the repeat business that they have unless they have shown over and over again that they get the job done. How do they get the job done? Well, I don't care whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever the insurance may be, they find you exactly the right coverage. They also find you the best price. And if something happens or you have a question, they make sure it is taken care of. So that's what you want. Once again, that's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Matt Leon from Philadelphia in a few moments. We'll talk about the Eagles' win over the Giants yesterday, 25-22. Then in the next half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com on Penn State's win Saturday over Maryland. First, this day in sports history. The National Hockey League in 1917 was founded on this date. The teams were the Montreal Canadiens, the Montreal Wanderers, the Ottawa Senators, the Toronto Arenas, and the Quebec Bulldogs. Frank Calder, the now named Calder Trophy, was elected as the first NHL president. He served from 1917 to 1943. Maurice the Rocket Richard from the Montreal Canadiens scored his 600th career NHL goal. Howard Cosell called his final boxing match in his career in 1982. Guy Lafleur announced he would retire after 14 incredible seasons in the NHL in 1984. 1988, Barry Sanders became only the second running back in NFL history to run for more than 15,000 yards. And that is this day in sports history. And with that, let's talk about the Eagles from yesterday and bring in Matt Leon from Philadelphia. Matt, welcome. It's always great to have you back.
Great to be with you.
Well, Elliott gets the Giants again. But the Giants attacked the corners, obviously, in the game against Philadelphia yesterday. What was your thought on how the Eagles played yesterday? Does it really matter style points-wise? They just needed to win?
Well, they needed to win. I think it's two separate games. In the first half, the Giants were on pace for 700 yards of offense, and the Eagles at one point were down 16 points. In the second half, the Eagles held them, I think it was like 55, 56 total yards, and the Eagles won the, you know, took over the game in the second half and were able to grab the victory. I think part of it was the defense improving in the second half, and actually Malcolm Jenkins went to the defensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz, and asked him to simplify things, because one of the problems they were having in the first half, because they have so many guys that haven't played together and are young in the secondary, is guys were getting confused or being out of position when they did checks and changes and stuff like that. So they simplified it. It seemed to work. I also think they got helped by the Giants for getting Saquon Barkley, was one of the most effective talents in the NFL, and stopped giving him the football in the second half. But it also, it goes hand in hand with the Eagles offense. They rediscovered the running game, really ground things out, held the Giants to, I think it was 21 plays from scrimmage in the second half. You know, and your defense is going to look a lot better when it gets to sit on the sidelines for 8, 10, 12 minutes at a time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. It was mystifying how Barkley didn't touch the ball much in the second half.
Yeah, I don't quite understand, you know, and it sounds like a lot of the Giants were confused. I know Odell Beckham got asked about the second half, and I thought was very good in basically had him saying, hey, I just work here. I don't know what to tell you, which I thought was damning in its own right. But, the first half kind of was like the worst-case scenario, what I thought could happen.
Yeah.
And it's really not anything against the Eagles secondary. You know, you got guys that have been brought off the practice squad for a week and haven't played. You know, that you're asking an awful lot. Say what you want about the Giants' struggles. You know, Eli's won two Super Bowls. I know where he is in his career, but he's still a veteran quarterback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Beckham, Shepard, they've got wide receivers, not to mention Barkley, that could stand up to anyone in the NFL. So in the first half, they went after them and really dominated, and then in the second half, it was a completely different ball game. And I think a lot of that was the Eagles' adjustments and the Eagles stepping up defensively, but I think some of it was just kind of the mysterious play calling and getting away from what was working.
What kind of confidence? Sometimes you just need a jolt of something positive. What kind of confidence should the Eagles get out of that game yesterday?
I think they should get a lot, and I think they should get a lot because of the way they did it. It's a little worn out, but they did show the heart of a champion because at 19-3 in the second quarter, that looks like it's it. And I don't mean just it for the day. I mean it for the season. And they were able to dig deep, turn things around. I think you credit the players for going to the coaches and saying, hey, this isn't working. We've got to do X, Y, and Z. You got to credit the coaches for listening. Now all of a sudden, it's fascinating. It's amazing how things can change in the NFL. Because now you're looking at the next 6-7 days where if the Cowboys is expected to lose to the Saints on Thursday and the Eagles can beat Washington on Monday night at home with Colt McCoy a quarterback, guess what? The defending Super Bowl champs are now tied for first. And, when you think about where they were at about 2:20 yesterday afternoon, I don't know that anyone would have seen that coming.
No, I don't think so either. Who stands out to you for Philadelphia right now?
Zach Ertz is having... Yeah. He's not as flashy and doesn't get the headlines as some of the other big tight ends. But when it's all said and done, he's probably going to put together one of the greatest receiving seasons in the history of the NFL from the tight end position. He's already over 80 catches. He's going to get into the triple digits, barring something unforeseen. So he's been phenomenal. And Josh Adams did a really nice job at running back yesterday and got 22 carries, which somebody mentioned this, and I found this a fascinating note. That was the most carries by an Eagles running back since Ryan Matthews.
Wow.
So you're going back to, you're going back a couple of years there, and it's interesting that that would be the guy. When you think of all the success they had last year, but no one got into that level of carries, but he helped stabilize things, and they kept feeding him the football, and he did a nice job, and I expect him to really be the number one guy. Another guy I don't want to say, he's really been a mystery this season. But I think another big key coming out of yesterday is Corey Clement looked like the guy he did last year.
Yeah.
He had that burst. He made a couple of big plays because for the last several weeks he has been very pedestrian with the ball in his hands. And it was really one of the things he's just kind of started, you heard a lot of people wondering, is he hurt? Is he trying to play through something? Because he just didn't seem effective. Yesterday, he looked like the guy that was a head-turner last year and was a big reason why they won the Super Bowl. And if he can get back to that level and give them another playmaker on offense, that could be big, is to give them a nice 1-2 punch, with how Adams is running right now. I don't know that Josh Adams is a guy you count on long-term, but you're kind of at a point in the season and in a situation where you're going week to week. Right now, he is your most consistent running back, and he's the guy you ride. So that was big as well.
All right, so now they make this next step. I made a joke during a couple weeks ago that, the one breather will be the Giants game, and they ended up needing to win the game at the end, but right back into the frying pan for him today, this week.
What? I'm sorry, you dropped out. What did you say?
I said right back into the frying pan this week for the Eagles.
Yeah, and you got Washington coming in on Monday night. Now it's funny how, everybody was on board Washington, then Alex Smith got hurt,
right. And
they didn't look very impressive at all in that game at Dallas.
No.
It's a different world with Colt McCoy at quarterback. You would hope he is a guy that the Eagles defense can take advantage of. You also hope maybe it's an Eagles defense that gets a little healthier, gets some of those defensive backs that they are calling day-to-day or week-to-week, and maybe they can get them back into the lineup. You kind of referenced this earlier, so much of this game is confidence/mentality, and picking up a win like that and, kind of getting up off the mat, and now you see a kind of a beaten-up Washington team coming in. Maybe you win that, and then all of a sudden it's the game of the year the following week when they visit the Cowboys,
right.
A game that very well could, decide supremacy in the division.
All right, I have to ask you about Ron Hextall. They made the move. He's out as general manager in Philadelphia. What were your thoughts?
I was surprised. I wasn't surprised something came down the pike. I didn't think that would be it. You know, Ron Hextall really kind of changed the way the Flyers do business. Under him, they've been much more of a team developing young players, leaning on the draft, whereas before they were a team that kind of considered themselves a Stanley Cup contender every year and would go make moves every year kind of based on that. I didn't see it coming, but you know, this is a Flyers team that during his run, they made the playoffs a couple times, but they were never a team that you really looked at and thought, well, they've got a run in them. They've kind of been a fringe playoff team the entire time. They haven't taken that big step forward. And, you know, this was year five, and they played a lot of games this year that they have looked bad.
Saturday,
the last one in Toronto, they lost 6-0, and it wasn't that close. And they've had too many of those games for where they should be in their development. And I think there was kind of a feeling that that was going to be the move, you had the feeling that something was going to happen, some kind of a move to shake things up. I did not think this would be it, but we'll learn more. They're going to have a press conference tomorrow morning to talk about it and where they go from here. But, you know, I think this is a big move, and you have to wonder if this isn't the first that leads to other moves, because head coach Dave Hextall was Ron Hextall's guy.
Yes.
And it would be, given the, you know, limited success, the inconsistency that Hextall's provided over as head coach, and kind of, you know, his background as a college guy coming into the NHL, I would be very surprised if another GM were to kind of sign off and keep him on. So this could just be the first of many moves for this franchise. And then it kind of in the bigger picture, you kind of wonder, all right, well, where do they go from here? You know, they've spent 4 or 5 years developing young talent, and it's gotten them, you know, where? They're seventh in the Metropolitan Division. Yep. They're a fringe 7 or 8 seed in the playoffs. So are you tearing down? Are you retooling? What, you know, there's a lot of questions, and most of them aren't good. So it's, you know, you kind of wonder, this is a franchise in disarray right now, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Matt Leon, Philadelphia, joining us from KYW. Flyers removing Ron Hextall as general manager today. Am I right? He's right. I was surprised about that. I thought it'd be the other way around. They make a coaching change, but they removed Ron Hextall instead of Dave Hextall. Found that to be interesting. Next half hour, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Neil Coulong on the Steelers tomorrow. Great to have you with us today. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Great to have you with us on this Monday. Let's say football 9-3 to close out the season. Now the question is, what is their bowl fate? Obviously, some of it is tied to what happens on Saturday. But there are a couple things that people need to know. Number one, the Texas-Oklahoma game. And that game has some bearing, but I wonder when to understand. Both Texas and Oklahoma will end up in a New Year's Six game. You're saying, well, how can it be if Texas loses? No. The Big 12 needs to have a team in the Sugar Bowl under its contract. It is a Big 12 team against the SEC. So I just want to at least remind people of that. Also, they're not keen on sending repeat teams. You know, of course, when they lost to the to Michigan, they're going to the Pinstripe Bowl. Like, they contractually, no, they can't go back to the Pinstripe Bowl for a couple more years. What do you mean? Know the rules. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. Know the rules. I know your opinion's out of emotion. Know the rules. Now let's get to the next part. Where do I think they might go? I think it's down to two choices. I think it's down to either the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, or it is the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, or the home of the Falcons, the Mercedes brand new Mercedes-Benz Dome. If Penn State gets there to the Peach Bowl, it would be the first time they've gone to three straight New Year's Six games since 80, 81, and 82. Now, Chris was talking a little bit earlier about that great run where they went to five straight in the 70s. 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, where they played in two Cottons, two Sugars, and an Orange. So I have that combination right? Doing that off the top of my head here.
So it would have been, 71, cotton, sugar, orange. Two sugar, two cotton, one orange. Yep.
Huh? How about that?
Sounds like making a drink.
Yeah. I've still got it.
Whatever it is. Yes, you got it.
Whatever it is, I still remember something. Today, of course, the first day of. I believe the suit returned to work today, right?
I haven't seen him. I'm here strictly for you today. I am the Steve Jones lapdog today.
I checked in with Jamie briefly, and I said, "Suit's back." She said she didn't notice any difference. All right, so
Macatrillo just updated me. Indeed, he is here. So
is he?
Yes, he is.
It explains why Matt's nervous. All right, so. Oh, my goodness. A lot of coaching moves today, and a couple that are very interesting potentially. We knew that Larry Fedora was out as the head coach at North Carolina. Now it looks like they are going to hire Mack Brown. They're going to bring him back to North Carolina. Now they say he's the front runner. That nothing has been signed yet. So the reports that it's automatic and he's in, no, not there yet. But he is considered to be the front runner. He's been out of it now for 5 years. But Herm Edwards, and also under the category of being a pro coach, Herm Edwards was out for 10 years. And you know what? In the Pac-12 South, there are only two teams going to a bowl game. You realize that? Just Utah and Arizona State are the only two Pac-12 South teams that are bowl eligible.
Very down year for the Pac-12.
But one of them happens to be... One happens to be Arizona State.
Yeah.
So that's one right there. Rashawn Gary will not be returning to Michigan next season. He is declared for the NFL draft. There is no I don't think there's anyone on the planet that thought he was coming back. Now the question is going to be, will he play in the bowl game? He didn't say anything about that, but you have to wonder. Especially mid-season, because I know there was one prominent person in Michigan that I know, and there's no question he is prominent. All right? That told Jack and me that he thought Gary was taking it easy for the draft when he was sitting out in the middle of the season with I think it was a bad shoulder, I believe. This guy wasn't exactly enamored with that, nor was he buying it. So, whether he plays in the bowl game or not, that's the next part. But he did declare for the NFL draft today. Many think he's a top 10 pick. Some say 5. I'll say 10. I'll be honest with you. I never saw him play a great game when he was there.